Welcome to episode 10. Pain in your vagina and pain in the pelvis is a pain in the butt. As physiotherapists, we treat pain. Pubic pain, SI joint pain, tailbone pain, sit bone pain, pain with sex, pain in the vagina or anus, period pain, bladder pain, pain from endometriosis, vulvar pain, you name it, we see it. Sometimes clients make it to us right away, and sometimes it's years before they hear about how effective seeing a physio can be for pain. In this episode, I sit down with one of my go-to colleagues for covering this topic. Jill Mueller practices pelvic health with a special interest in pain in Oakville, Ontario, where she co-owns Healthy Balance Physiotherapy and Wellness. She has a multitude of clinical certificates and shares her knowledge as a lab assistant in advanced physiotherapy courses. Most importantly, she's great at helping people understand the complexity of pain without it seeming confusing or like a big dark cloud that you need to carry around with you everywhere. In a nutshell, here's what we want you to know about pain. We want you to know there's no magic wand. There isn't one specific exercise or sequence of exercises that will take it away, and it's rarely as simple as just rubbing it out or releasing the muscles involved. Most importantly, we want you to know your pain is real. It's not all in your head, but it kind of is in your head because it's all about your brain. Let's talk about this more. Welcome to the Pelvic Floor Project. I'm your host, Melissa DeSalles, a physical therapist in Kelowna, BC, Canada, and founder of Mommy Berries, an online platform to support pregnant and postpartum women. I'm here because too many women fear their body during pregnancy and then feel let down by their body after baby, and I want to help change this. My goal with this podcast is to take my personal experience as a mom of two, my knowledge as a PT, and everything I've learned from my clients, and then sit down with other professionals, not only to provide you with evidence-based information, but maybe, just maybe, spark some changes by bringing our professions together. I'm confident we can make some headway if we come together to look at women holistically. I'm curious to see what changes this project will make in my community, and I look forward to have you join me on this journey. A reminder that content in this podcast is intended as general information only and should not be considered medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Now, sit back and relax while you listen. I know this will be difficult for you because you have 3,450 things to do, but I challenge you to put yourself first during this episode. Jill, I absolutely love talking to you about this topic because I think you do such a good job of not only tying in your personal experience, but just also making people feel that they're normal, they're not weird, and that pain can be navigated. And I wonder if you start with, like, what brought you to this area of practice? What makes you interested in treating pain?
Well, I did take a course in 2010 through the NOI group, blah, 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 a group that is really up on their pain research. But I was very, very pregnant at the time. So I retained very little. So later on, I took another course with Carolyn Van Dyken, and she goes into the most updated research on addressing persistent pain. And that is where I really started to realize that I, as someone who has endometriosis, has persistent pain. I never really made the connection that because it was monthly, it still was chronic. And so I started to use some of the principles that she spoke of and use them on myself. And so I learned a lot using that on myself, and actually I don't have cyclical pain anymore. So it was pretty fascinating.
That's awesome. And tell us a little bit more about, because some people listening won't know kind of where you're located and what exactly you do. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Sure. I'm in Oakville, Ontario, so just outside of Toronto. I co-own a clinic there called Healthy Balance Physiotherapy and Wellness. We have a few programs there, including a pain program and an endometriosis program, as well as some other ones, but those ones help address using what we call a biopsychosocial approach with our clients.
Awesome.
Who have persistent pain.
Awesome. So would you say that the majority of your caseload does relate to pelvic pain or pain in general? Or what would you say?
I do see mostly, so I'm a pelvic physiotherapist. I mean, that's not a trademarked name per se. It's just an easy way to let people know that we treat that area down there. I was an ortho physio for 15 or 17 years before I became a pelvic physio, but I decided to not go sort of the pregnancy route, which tends to be what a lot of people are doing. I liked the complexity of the pelvic pain. It's something that once you learn how to guide your clients on how to manage it, it's not as overwhelming. I think otherwise it can seem overwhelming, which patients will see when they see their doctor. They get told a lot, it's in their head and that sort of thing. Yeah. So it's really rewarding being there for people and guiding them through how to manage their symptoms, how to listen to their body and just learn ways to, I mean, you're never going to be pain-free. We are human. Mm-hmm. to live pain-free. It's a very rare condition and those people do not live very long. So you never want to say that you're going to be living pain-free. There is a reason that we have pain. It's more when we are oversensitized that it becomes an issue with our quality of life.
Totally. And I think that's what I think I want to jump to kind of a definition of pain here. That I'm just taking from the IASP, the International Association for the Study of Pain. And if we just, I don't want to make this all about like the definition and sound too scientific, but I just think I want to pick this apart a little bit. So it says, pain is an unpleasant sensory and emotional experience associated with or resembling that associated with actual or potential tissue damage. And I think that's important because I think, you know, I was touching on it earlier, that I think a lot of times people think like pain equals danger, danger, and danger. And then as soon as you even said, I didn't associate my problems with like chronic pain, because I think there's a label to chronic pain. Like you're not a coper, you're stuck with this for life. Now you're just going to snowball out of control. And I think that definition I think is helpful in just saying like, there's a lot going on. And I want to make sure that this episode doesn't become wah, wah, pain is pain. And there's so much to deal with. So good luck with that, but more that it's complex and there's so many things you can do to unpackage it. Right.
Yeah.
So given that definition, I wonder if, you know, I don't know if you have anything specific to say about that, but I wondered if you want to just start with something as simple as why does pain even start or how does it start? Because I mentioned in the introduction, all the different things that people might be experiencing when it comes to pain, like all the different reasons clients would come to see us. But if we just pick, you know, one specific incident or one specific topic to talk about to start with, you know, why does pain even start? What happens in the body that makes us feel pain? Yeah.
Well, pain is basically there to protect us. Mm-hmm. So generally it's going to respond to either temperature, chemical, or mechanical stressors on our body. Like if we bend our finger back too far, that's mechanical. If we touch something hot, we're going to react because the temperature is too hot, or chemical, like a chemical reaction spill, that sort of thing. It's when our brain perceives that as dangerous that it will give the output of pain to get us to do something about it. And this all happens very fast. But there are stories of people who have experienced no pain with a lot of tissue damage, and then other people with no tissue damage with a lot of pain. And therefore you have to kind of say, well, so it's not just about tissue damage. What else is going on with this scenario that is producing this pain? So for example, Bethany Hamilton is an American surfboard professional surfboarder. We've probably seen her on, what was that movie? Blue.
I totally know what you mean, but I can't, I'm so bad at recalling movies.
I can't remember the movie, yeah. But it's about her life. And so she was surfing one day and she felt this wiggle, wiggle tug and realized that she had been bitten by a shark, but she was able to get out of the water and swim to shore. But she said she never felt any pain at the time. The reason is because her brain perceived this is a safety issue. I need to survive. I'm going to override this pain right now and get you out of the water to where you can get safety, right? So no pain. Obviously, her arm was
severed,
like chopped off.
Yeah.
Or bitten off. So major tissue damage, no pain. There's another story of a man who was at a construction site and he stepped, he had like steel toed boots on and he stepped on a nail and the nail went right through his boot. Mm-hmm. And so he looked down and had excruciating pain. They had to remove the board, bring the board with him to the hospital so that they could remove it from his foot safely. So the doctors were prepared. They were in the OR room. They were able to remove the, cut the boot off or whatever. And then they realized that the nail was in between his toes. So not even touching, no tissue, not even a drop of blood. And this man was in excruciating pain. So he looked down, felt pain because he thought it went through his foot. And that was what is going to get him some help, right? And do something about it. But there are two different examples of when we have no tissue damage, a lot of pain, and a lot of tissue damage and no pain.
And that's where I think that, you know, whenever we talk about pain, it's hard not to bring up the brain. And that's where I think like you try to explain this and people always take away, it's not in my head. I'm like, no, it's not all in your head. That's not what I said, but it is in your head and that your brain has something to do with that, right?
So it has everything to do with it.
Exactly. So can you maybe talk about that a little bit? You've already touched on that, but go into more detail, like, because I think this is the most important thing about this episode is explaining why, like you've talked about the tissue damage, but then elaborate a little bit more on like the brain's role in this. Yeah.
So I think it's important to note that pain is 100% real. I want anybody who is experiencing pain to hear me say it is 100% real. And so doctors they know this, but I think the problem, especially here in Canada, is that we're given very little time with the doctor and very little time for them to be able to explain that. So that's one thing. Secondly, I don't think they learn about this very well in school. The medical system is really good for trauma, for medical issues like heart attacks and cancer and that sort of thing. But our medical system is really lacking in being able to help manage pain. I mean, yes, I'm not saying that we can unthink it. It needs to be untrained. I say to my patients, if you decided today to do a marathon, you can't just think yourself to be able to do a marathon. You have to go through the laborious training to be able to get to to do a marathon and actually feel half decent about it. Even if you don't feel decent about it, you have to train to be able to do that marathon. Just like getting out of pain, you need to train your system. You can't unthink it. You have to train your brain to learn how to bring that sensitivity back to sort of, I don't like the word normal, but a threshold that it allows you to function in life, in the world and socially, emotionally, mentally. Where was I going with that?
Well, I know where you're going. Cause I wonder if like, we talk a lot about like, if I just could make a parallel or an analogy, like we talk a lot about people with like overactive bladder and how, you know, sometimes they have like a trigger in their house. It's like, as soon as I get to my front door or as soon as I go down past the downstairs toilet, like it's something that becomes sensitized. Like there's nothing about that area, you standing there, that makes your bladder more full. It's that your brain is trained to kind of like,
so feel, it's conditioned. It's so conditioned. There's conditioning with that, but actually urgency is also can be a sign of sensitization. Like, have you seen clinically in the summer, probably last June, July, I saw a ton of people coming in and they all thought they had bladder infections because because they had urgency, frequency, you know, maybe not so much pain, but maybe with filling, they had a little bit of pain, but basically they would go to their doctors would culture their urine and it was coming back negative, but then they were put on antibiotics anyway. And so that is another sign. It doesn't have to be pain. That is, think of when we did our exams. Remember in university, we all did our exams and we were like, oh, or our national exam. Remember that? Everybody was running to the bathroom, upset stomachs, diarrhea, constipation, like the digestive swings can, IBS symptoms can also be a symptom of this sensitization. So it's interesting when you learn more about this, if someone comes in and they're complex and they have digestive issues and they have bladder issues and they have pain, a lot of times looking at how to manage this through a biopsychosocial approach can actually help. We don't have to divide it up. It can help all of these. And it is an opportunity to address the complexities
exactly
that this sensitized system can present as.
Exactly. And that's what I think, like just understanding that our body, and I think everyone can find other parallels in your kids or in other things that you do, that like our body just becomes, like you said, conditioned or sensitized to something, to like a behavior, to a habit. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what happens with pain too, right? And mm-hmm. and so I guess that probably explicit, let's look, can we talk about a specific issue? Like, let's talk, pick one, Jill, pick a specific issue that, you know, someone starts with having pain. Well, let's talk about dyspareunia or pain with sex. That's a good one.
Yeah. Yeah.
So let's say I've seen a lot of clients lately that, you know, the first time that they were sexually intimate was, on the night of their wedding. Okay. And mm-hmm. so, you know, obviously a lot of stress goes into that, a lot of pressure, you know, this is like the first time, what's this going to be like? And it's often painful. Okay. So that's their first, exposure to pain associated with sex. Okay. So that's kind of how the pain starts. Right. And they've had, mm-hmm. like you said, like mechanical pain, right? Then what? Why does it become persistent? Yeah. What? Because they often come in saying like, oh my gosh, ever since that night, it's like that all the time. And yeah. I've tried everything. I've been to my doctor. They've tried this medication. I've tried relaxing. I've tried having a glass of wine, like they suggested, yeah. but it doesn't go away. So let's talk about that specific issue. Like, why doesn't that pain go away?
Well, yeah, dyspareunia is a good example because it easily could start off as a mechanical stressor. We're not used to feeling something so different, for example, that might be a little more stretched than we're used to, that sort of thing. So the mechanical part component is there. But then our brain says, this hurt. So I'm going to remember next time to not let you do that because it's going to hurt again. Mm-hmm. So there can be this learned association where it doesn't affect your urine. It doesn't affect your bowel movements because the brain knows we've been doing that for so long that, I mean, it can, that's a whole other subject, but it learns that the association with intercourse or penetration is painful. So even though the mechanical stressors may have adjusted and you're okay with that part, although you won't know, it becomes really protective. The pelvic floor muscles are very protective. Mm-hmm. So that's been shown in research. They react like, just like if we're stressed, we kind of tend to go like this, we might grit our teeth. It's been shown that our pelvic floor muscles also tighten. And so if we are anticipating pain, they're like the guards to the party, is what I say. Exactly. And so you need to teach the guards that they don't actually have to guard against anything, that you're okay. And there's different means to do that based on the person's sensitivity, right?
Totally. And that, again, it comes down to, they're not really the boss in this situation. The brain is, right? The brain has decided that this is a dangerous thing and that it's going to protect. And like you said, it's almost like a learned behavior. Therefore, until you change the behavior or until you change the response, you're not necessarily going to get the response of your body that you're looking for.
There's a really good video on YouTube by Lorimer Mosley. If anybody wants to look this up in terms of the associations.
Yes. I'll put it in the show notes for sure. Keep going. Yeah.
It's called Why Pain Hurts.
Yeah.
And it's a great video and he's very entertaining and he's the biggest pain researcher in the world right now. Along with a few others, but he definitely is entertaining in how to explain pain and that association that our brain makes with a past experience, which I've seen this in some of my clients. It's super interesting where they may have had a trauma in the past, like abuse or something like that. And then they've gone through therapy and they're doing better, but then like a UTI and then something associated with it. Like I don't know, it may be somebody reminded them of that abuser and they got a UTI at the same time. Like it can be, that association can be very, very strong in our brain for good and for bad. Like sometimes we smell something, like when I smell a pipe, it reminds me of my grandfather because my brain has made that association, right? So it can be the reverse where there is an association with it can be untrained with help. I mean, depending on the complexities of what triggered it, you may need to get a psychologist involved or counselor, and that can be really helpful. I also have clients who have done talk therapy for years and they needed the trained touch therapy added on. So this is where both of our professions can be really helpful with people with persistent pain.
Totally. And I think that one of the things I explain to my clients for them to understand is that, first of all, let me go backwards and just, I was just having this conversation with my husband yesterday, who's also a physio. And he said he had a lady come in with chronic tight pain. And he suggested she watch that exact video that you just talked about by Lorimer Mosley. And she came home, she came back to him and she said, I'll be honest with you. The first time I watched it, I was so mad at you because I felt what I took out of it was that you're saying that this is all in my head. And she said, but then she said, honestly, I trust you. And I thought, you're trying to tell me something. So I watched it again. I digested it for a couple of days. I watched it again and I took something totally different out of it. And so one of the things I explain to my clients is that it's so easy for us to say, like, my stupid body's working against me. Like, why is it working against me? But instead to think of it like, thank you, body. Like, I know that you're doing this for a reason.
Huge.
Like you're doing this for some reason to protect me and turning that into like, thank you for doing that. But listen, we've got the messages crossed a little bit. I'm okay or whatever. Like that person that abused me is not in my life anymore. So what can I do to help you change that? And I think that helps people understand, because otherwise it just feels this thing that you can't get on top of, right? You just, if it's my brain and if it's in my head, then I have no control over it. But that's the thing. It's adopted that method to protect you. It can change. Like the brain can be modified. It's incredible, right?
I think what you mentioned in terms of, the resistance that we have, like, I think the main key is lay people don't understand pain. I mean, I didn't until a couple of years ago, which is ridiculous, but because the research out there is not even new. That's the frustrating thing. But what if we resist what our bodies and minds are trying to tell us, then that's when suffering happens. That's where that persistence of this happens. So if we can start to listen to those messages and learn what to do with those messages, that is where that's where quality of life can change. Totally. And that is, that's why we need to look at this as different opportunities versus this is all in your head. Good luck with that. It's not like that.
Totally. But I think sometimes people, you know, when someone comes in and has a specific pain, especially that's been persisted for a while. I think that's why it's so important to find out kind of what, you know, what their story is or like what their beliefs are about it, what their experiences are, because you have to figure out, like, meet them where they're at. Right. And because how many people come in and they're just like, tell me what muscle, I need you to find it and touch it and get it out. Like, I need you to use some elbow grease. I need you to get that out and then it'll go away. Yeah. And so it's hard sometimes to explain, like, you know what, it's not going to be as simple as that, because you can see that you've like, as a clinician, you can feel that disappointment sometimes when they're like, oh, really? I have to do stuff, you know, like, I don't want to make it emotional. It's not really, I don't want to talk about that. I just want you to rub it out. I'm like, well, you know, and sometimes it takes some people come in and they're just like, I know this is something big, and you can just see that they're ready. They're like, I understand this is tied to my past and I'm ready for this. Whereas other people, it takes them a bit longer to get there, and that's fine. Right.
We might be planting the seeds for people, and they might leave, and then they might be introduced to it again. I mean, I think by the time people come to see me, I've kind of gotten that reputation now. So people know that trust. I'm going to be looking at things. They've been referred, which I think is helpful. But a lot of people just learning this, it is the way we explain things. I think the important thing is to use our patient's language. Like you said, we listen to their story. That's a huge part of it. They've been cut off from telling their story. You have like 5 minutes or 7 minutes to explain everything. Like, there are times like you and I will sit with our clients and let them speak the whole hour. And they're like, thank you. No one has ever
listened
to me and believed me. And there are times where I might be introducing this concept to them, and I say, I understand that it's going to be hard for you to necessarily trust that this system will work. But I think maybe if you stick with me for a few treatments, and then you might start to see things start to shift. It's not a quick thing. It's not something you can massage out, like you said, but if we can introduce the concept that we can make some change over time and use some questionnaires, some validated questionnaires to help them see that, because they're looking for black and white. They're looking for pain one day, no pain the next day. And we actually, I don't even ask them the visual analog scale on that. Rate your pain on 0 to 10. I don't even use that. I say, what is this interfering with you doing today? Or what, and how confident are you that you can do that? I'll use those rating scales. And then we start to see a shift there. So if we keep it towards function and you see that, hey, I can go out and go for a little bit longer of a walk. And I think the key is also, a lot of times when they start to see change, they might be doing too much and then it results in a flare up. We need to also pace ourselves, just like running. You cannot go out and run a 10K on the first day. You run your 1K and you come back and you're like, I really felt like I did nothing. That's how we have to progress. We have to make our brain always feel safe.
Totally.
If you cross that line where it feels like, here's the line of safety and safe and unsafe, it perceived. We need to come up to that line and kind of nudge it so that that sensitivity decreases and their tolerance for activity increases. If you push too hard, you're going to go right on to the other side. And that's what results in a flare up.
Totally. And your brain will be like, no, sorry. I've been used to kind of putting the brakes on here, and I'm going to send out a message of pain to tell you to stop. Right. And
yep.
Exactly. You're just trying to kind of move that barrier or what have you.
Yeah.
I'm glad that you kind of went in this direction, because this is what I wanted to do next. I mean, given that it's both Pelvic Pain Awareness Month, just this is why I wanted to schedule this month, but it's also National Physiotherapy Month. And so I kind of wanted to tie into like what our role is. Like, I mean, I mentioned in the intro that sometimes people make it to us right away. They associate physios with pain and I'm going to go see the physio. But a lot of times, especially with some of the things that people experience, like pain with sex, like we talked about, or bladder pain, or even tailbone pain, pain associated with their cycles, like they don't necessarily associate that with physio. So sometimes there's several years before people make it to us. So I do kind of want, if anyone's listening and they can relate to this, I kind of want to talk step by step about some of the things that we might look at as physios, because you've started talking about that. And I just want that to be clear so that people understand, you know, what they would get out of coming to an appointment. So as you mentioned, and please keep in mind, Jill and I are going to talk about what we do, but every physio is different in their approach. So this just gives you an idea of what you might be looking for. I know, because I've talked to you about my intake form before too. So I think our intake forms are probably similar in a lot of ways. But the first thing that you'll get when you book with both of us is a form, a pretty lengthy form to fill out that just asks you your story. Like you said, it's going to ask you, it's going to include some questionnaires asking you about your pain, when you experience it, how you experience, how it affects your life. But then lots of details just about your bladder, your bowel, you know, whether or not you've had children, so many different things. Mm-hmm. And I think that those forms surprise people. And that's, I think sometimes, like, obviously the people that have complex pain like this, I agree. It allows them to put it down in a safe place, because I found before I gave those ahead of time, when they would come in, they wouldn't necessarily tell me I was a stranger. And already there's that, I don't know you and I don't know how much to tell you. Whereas on a piece of paper, I feel like they're a little bit more open. Do you find?
Yeah, when I first started using the lengthier forms, I was surprised. Sorry, if there's a lot that's of okay. noise in the background,
it's life.
That would be our coffee maker.
Yeah, that's life.
Yeah. Working from home.
Yeah.
So the questionnaires, I was surprised at how many people actually were saying, wow, like that was a lengthy, and I'm like, I know. And I really do say, thank you so much for taking the time to fill that out. It allows us to have it down and it allows us to now have a conversation. So I don't have to be like,
yes, exactly.
The whole time. But they're like, no, actually it's good.
Thank you.
Thank you for, and then it also, like you said, it segues, like they don't know, they may be coming in for pelvic pain, but they don't know that we talk about poo and pee and those other things. And a lot of people don't, which is why I love that you're doing this podcast, because it allows people to recognize what we do as physiotherapists, especially pelvic physio, if it relates to the area around the pelvis. Digestive issues, peeing, pooing, sex. Like, what other professions are able to speak about such complexities down there? Like, it's amazing.
Totally. So, and I just good. Like, I don't mean to interrupt you, but I just something you said made me think, I think it's important to say that I'm just going to use that person as an example again, that had the pain with sex that we were talking about. Mm-hmm. And just to understand that sometimes, like, that small symptom, I don't mean small, but like that one symptom might start to grow to more symptoms. You think, this was first all I had, and now it hurts to poop, or now I'm having issues with my bladder, because everything's so intimately connected down there. And again, the brain's kind of the powerhouse of it all. And so just understanding that it's not, your body again is not spiraling out of control. Your body's so adaptable, and it thinks it's helping you, and it's just making modifications that aren't necessarily helpful. So I think that that's why we ask so many questions, is trying to figure out, like, what is this? How is this affecting this person? So anyways, go ahead.
And you got me thinking about something too, based on what you said. Like, once you start with one area, like that mechanical pain with intercourse, for example, and as the brain becomes more and more sensitized, we have a map of the body on the brain, and what it associated with that one area, like the vagina, will then start to send messengers to the neighbors, for example, the bladder and the bowel. And so all of a sudden, like you said, you end up with bladder pain or bowel pain, and you didn't have that before, and you think that you're falling apart and everything's falling apart. Interestingly, that map of the body on the brain, the feet are next to the pelvis. So it doesn't always make sense. And so a lot of people with pelvic pain over time will end up or can end up with feet problems like plantar fasciitis and that sort of thing. And they're like, what totally the heck? Feeling yes. like they're falling apart, but it's just because of this pain response is now becoming overprotective and talking to the neighbors and saying, you need to start getting in on this and protecting too.
Totally. There's an emergency going on here. Everybody help out.
Everybody. Know? Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And so yes, the first thing that you'll do is you'll tell us a lot about you so that we can figure out how this is affecting your whole body and your whole life. And then, what do you do next, Jill? I mean, I don't expect you to go through everything. I know it totally depends on the person. But like you said, sometimes it depends on the person. So after you've taken their story and their history.
So I use a lot of validated questionnaires and I'll go through those questionnaires with them and say, here's some opportunities for us to make change. Where do you want to start? Where do you either think is the place that you're most confident starting, which is often where they'll want to start. So I may not be making that decision for them. If they are like, I have no clue, then I might lay it out. Like, here's what we could do X, Y, or Z. What do you think? Like, I just make it a little less overwhelming because sometimes this is like way too overwhelming. I might do an objective test on the first day. It depends on what they want to do, but I also have had patients come in and be angry right away without even, it's because sometimes we're like the last straw, right?
Totally.
And they're like, I don't want you doing an internal, which if anybody didn't know that we have the ability as pelvic physios to be able to do a manual, internal exam vaginally or rectally, which can be helpful, but for some people who are highly, highly sensitized, that's like, that's poking the bear.
Yeah,
you
exactly.
don't want to start there. You need to desensitize the whole system. So it really depends where they are on that scale of sensitization. If they're highly sensitized, where just regular touch aggravates their symptoms, then perhaps we don't go and touch, especially that area. If one area is highly sensitized, then maybe we start outside of that area. And then eventually as the system starts to get smaller and smaller sensitized, we move into that area of pain. But there are so many different ways that we could approach just basically based on where they're at.
Totally. And I think that's one of the very first things I said is that it's complex, not to mean that you'll never tackle it, but there's so many entry points. And I think that's exactly what you're saying is that everybody's entry point is different. And it doesn't matter what it is, because I think at the end of the day, we want to help you feel in control. I often explain it as green and red input. And I just say, like, you know, when you get pain or when you have an uncomfortable feeling, that it's like a red input and that sends those alarm bells or whatever to your body saying like, I've got to do something about this. Whereas green input would be like, I often ask them, you know, you've told me some of the things that make you feel yucky or that make you feel that pain. What are some things that make you feel cozy? And I always say for me, it's like kids out of the house, rainy day, cozy blanket, reading a book. What Love things it. Do that for you? And they always have something, you know, it's my heating pad or it's this. And I find that, you know, I explain to them, we just have to figure out some entry points into your body and making sure they understand I will always be green. Like I promise that I don't want to create red and I'm not here to rub it out and make pain or I'm not here to make it worse. Otherwise we're not going to get anywhere. I always say like, I will stay green. And so if that means that I never assess you internally, then I never assess you internally. If you feel like you need me to do that to help you understand your body, I'm happy to do that, but I will stop as soon as I am red. Anyways. Yes. And so I find that I often send them home. I started my very first podcast episode out with the first episode was often where I start all my clients, and it allows them to feel the difference between kind of their, not just their pelvic floor, but some of their core muscles feeling kind of like relaxed or off versus on. Cause I always want them to go home feeling their body kind of feeling on versus off, because I find that I send people home often with that, just as a sense of control, like that I want you to give you something that you feel like you have, and noticing how your breath can create green for you, for example. But I agree. Sometimes people aren't even ready for that. Like, Brett, you're going to send me home with this terrible pain and tell me to breathe. Like, please, lady. Yeah. But I think that it's important to understand there's so many entry points and everybody's is different. And I think at the end of the day, one of the other things I want people to understand is that not all physios are the same, and you don't have to work with one that doesn't create green for you. Right. And I think that that's important too, is find people that do make you feel safe and feel in control. Right.
Oh, that sense of safety and providing that is amazing. And I love your red and green analogy. I'm going to steal that.
Yeah.
That the patients need to feel that sense of safety always. And right away, by saying that, you're gaining their trust in that therapeutic alliance.
Yeah, exactly. I think, you know, and then obviously we can't go too much into what exactly we do, because it's going to depend on the person, but obviously we're going to use a combination of talking through things in your body, physical touch, if that's necessary, like whether we need to do some manual therapy or, you know, some fascial mobility or whatever we feel like we need to do. Plus also to exercise, right? Because we know movement mm-hmm. is very helpful for yep. pain, and for also decreasing, you know, a lot of people are scared to move or scared to do certain exercises. And so helping people learn to move with confidence and without pain is important.
Yeah.
Jill, anything else specific, that we haven't talked about with that respect?
I think a missing part, like, okay, so yes, the movement is important, but that doesn't mean, like you said, it has to feel safe and they have to be confident in what they do. So I don't want people to listen to this and think, okay, I was running before this, I guess that means go back to running. And I know that's not what you said, but I want to reiterate the fact that if you have fear of movement, then we need to find a movement that is gentle and calm and fun. And honestly, I have a lot of patients where I'm like, what kind of movement feels nice? And they're like, I like to dance. And I'm like, then put on your favorite music and just start to sway, start to move. If that's where it is for you, then that's where it is for you. It doesn't mean you have to go out and do exercise or do an exercise class. It has to, your brain has to perceive it as safe. So if you enjoy it, even better. The movement has been proven. So that's a big one.
I guess Jill, will you kind of just describe then, cause we talked about how like adding on pain or, adding on whatever the brain perceives as dangerous is like what heightens the pain response. But maybe if you talk about what exactly that movement is doing, like what's the benefit then of some of these things that we're providing them? Like what is that doing to the brain or to the nervous system? Like what effect does that have?
So it's almost like I like to kind of picture like a super highway, and the brain has been trained, the body message to the brain and then back to the body to say, to give it pain, is almost has become a super highway where that is the only route. It's like this situation or this touch equals pain. So it's like sends the message, brain says danger, 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 sends the message down to send out to say it gives you pain.
Pain, tension, so, all sorts
pain,
of other
pain,
things.
Pain, tension, yes. Hypersensitivity to touch, that's what this is.
Yeah.
Which you can't see on the audio. But so what I say is, with gentle movement, it's almost like we're taking the scenic route. We are creating a different route to the brain that the brain is like,
whoa,
oh,
what's
wait,
this?
I haven't heard of this. So It has to be novel. It's new. It doesn't have to be novel, but if it is novel, it will learn a lot quicker that that's not a threat. It has no preconceived notions of whether that's a threat or not. So it's like, huh, what is this message coming in?
Yeah.
And so that scenic route, which really, like, let's think about the most annoying highway that we're driving on. And we're like, by the time we get to the cottage or wherever our vacation spot is, we're like, if you take the scenic route, you get there nice and relaxed. So it's the same sort of analogy. You are creating these new neural pathways through this non-threatening new movement. And that is so key to gaining these new neural inputs, which will down-regulate that pain, which will calm the pain down.
That's awesome. Yeah. And like you said, that comes through different things. Like it comes to some people movement, some people meditation, some people stretching, right? Mm-hmm. Some people quiet. You know what I mean? And that's where I think it's important to kind of find your green, find what, you know, what does that for you? Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome.
It's important to honor that and find it for sure.
Awesome. I think I cut you off of something that you were saying.
Oh gosh, I don't remember.
Yeah. Most of us, right? But yeah, I think to summarize, I think just, you know, understanding it, this episode doesn't mean that you have to totally have it all figured out and that your pain goes away tomorrow, but just understanding that it's kind of in your head, but it's not in your head. Like it's related to your brain, but it's not something that we're saying that you're making up or that it's not your way, your body's way of not coping. It's your body's working on overtime to try to help you from something that it perceives as a threat. And so, you know, just understanding that you can affect that in a positive way, your brain can change. And it's not going to necessarily happen overnight. For some people, I think, like, you'll see as soon as they have that explanation, that in itself calms them down. They have that understanding. It makes a big change. Some people need more time and more inputs to their body. But I think, again, what were you going to say, Jill?
No. I'm telling my husband to stop doing the dishes. It's so loud.
But just understanding that there is help and to, you know, to find, you know, someone that can help you. We as physios are, you know, well-trained in this issue and obviously, you know, happy to help. And I think this sets the tone, Jill, for future episodes where we can talk about specific, you know, pain conditions. Like I said, bladder pain, or go into more detail with endometrial pain or what have you. So thank you so much for setting the stage.
I love that you're doing this podcast. I think it's so important for people to understand the complexities of their pain and that there are different opportunities to be able to make change. They just need to learn what they are. That's it.
Absolutely. Bruce, right before we go, I'm going to make sure that I also share in the show notes. Jill and I did a series, I want to say a couple of years ago now, about endometriosis, not only her experience, but I use it all the time as a resource for any of my clients to come in and have endo. And so I'll link that in the show notes because she does a great job of explaining all of this in relation to endometriosis. So thanks again, Jill.
Thank you.
And that's a wrap. I hope you've enjoyed the episode and have taken something valuable away. Please take the time to rate and review the podcast. And if you'd like more information about my online program to support women during pregnancy, birth prep, and postpartum recovery, check out my website, mommyberries.com. I'll see you next time.